Yeah. Sweet. All right. Last little bit, and I think this will probably take up the majority of the time. So there's a ton of conversation currently online talking about instructors shooting matches. So should instructors shoot matches? What's your
I don't, so
thoughts
I
on
want to
that?
reframe that. I want to reframe that because I
I
think
know, because I framed it very nicely.
should is obvious. I mean, I think everybody should shoot matches. The question is an instructor required to shoot matches to have credibility, I guess.
Is a great question, and there's a lot of conversation on the internet about it. And I will give my best attempt at a full 2 cents on it. I actually had this conversation about a year ago with a good friend of mine who's also an instructor, teaching a lot of federal law enforcement and state law enforcement, and a good instructor. All instructors should shoot matches. That is part of self-development. The frequency at which we shoot matches is something that I think is the big topic of conversation. Do you need to shoot matches to be relevant? Not necessarily, but I'm definitely going to, and this is just on a personal level, most students aren't going to necessarily look at that as a huge holdback. However, on a topic of professional development, shooting matches, it is a great way to get out of the echo chamber of your own practice range, your own practice group, and give yourself some new things to think about. Because you might be the top of your practice group, or if you're training by yourself, as a lot of instructors do, I know Nick, you're out on the range regularly by yourself putting in work. I'm out on the range regularly by myself putting in work. There are days where I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm crushing it. Like, this is awesome. I'm doing great. And I go to the match and I'm like, okay, that did not work out as planned. Okay.
For
And
sure.
so the echo chamber is where I think we have a problem. I do think that you learn a ton from shooting a match. It
Agreed.
highlights areas of your training that are either working or are not working. Because there's a lot of times where you're like, I think this is good. And then you go to a match and like, oh yeah, this is definitely good. This is
So, do you have an example of those? Because people will wonder what is the example? Because I think there's a couple things there that maybe people could misconstrue what you're saying. Because I think shooting a match doesn't mean, like, if you're really, really good at shooting matches, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the best shooter in the world. However, it does mean that you're a really good competitor. So I think that's two different things that go into being a really good, shooter at a national
So,
level.
okay,
Like, you
so
kind of have to
let's
be
let me
two,
let me
you know
go
what I
back
mean?
let me go back to that statement though. Shooting a match, just because you win a match doesn't mean you're best shooter in the world. What in that case, what are how would you qualify the best shooter in the world?
So
So like that's the thing. It's like this is a way to objectively look at shooting ability. And yes, there are absolutely some parts of competition mindset and ability to be consistent, all these things that go into it. And I think there's a big difference between saying that you have to win matches to be a good instructor or to be a good shooter, and looking at your performance in a match as, hey, I'm out there testing shit. Okay. I wouldn't say, I mean, there's dudes out there that are absolutely great shooters, great instructors, who can deliver really good information effectively, who aren't going to be winning a match. Now, would it be beneficial to win a match? Absolutely. If you can get yourself to the point where you can win a match, that's not going to degrade from your ability to teach either. So there's this balance between to say that the best shooter in the world is not the guy who's winning the match. I would argue that because I think that, yeah, at the end of the day, that is the best objective measure of your ability to shoot.
It is, but what I'm saying is, what else goes into that thing, right? Like, in terms of competition, right? It's not just the shooting piece. It's like learning how to be a good competitor as well, at least on that very, very high level.
Yep.
And I'm not saying it's bad or not. Like, I'm just saying, like, there's more to it than just the shooting piece of it. Like,
Sure.
if you know how to play the game really, really good, you're going to be a whole lot better than the guy that doesn't. And so,
I wouldn't say a whole lot better. I think that if you have two people of approximately equal shooting ability, shooting skill set, as far as like their raw skills of target transitions. So let's just say baselines. Okay. Baselines. Your rifle mounts the same, your doubles are the same, your transitions are the same, your movements the same, and you go throw that into a match setting. Somebody who shoots matches 3 times a month is going to outperform somebody who shoots a match 1 time every 3 months.
Absolutely.
Slightly. It is not going to be a big gap because the shooting ability is going to be very similar, especially if you have multiple targets. Now, stage planning, that's where things can get a little bit different. Okay. Understanding how to memorize a stage, execute on that memorization and work those. It's the same thing as a drill though, just sometimes a little bit more drawn out. So
yep.
What I would say is there's not going to be a huge gap there between somebody people who are the same skill level as far as their baselines go. And I think that I do think that it's an extremely valuable piece of the pie. Now, going back to what everybody's complaining about and arguing about on the internet, whether or not you have to have X amount of matches per year, I don't think that that's necessarily a thing. I think that keeping some matches consistently are important. And this is a conversation that I go back to where I was having with my buddy who's an instructor. He's like, hey, I shot a match like, a couple months ago, and I've got somebody in my organization that also teaches for him. He's shooting matches like every weekend, and we go to teach these classes, and somebody brought up this whole issue of like, well, you've only shot one match in the past 6 months. And it's like, I don't have time to do it. It's like, I've been on the road every single weekend teaching. I'm like, I get that. I was shooting, 30 and 40 matches a year a few years ago. Now I've had to cut back on all the local matches and focus on just the important majors for me. I might get to 2 or 3 local matches a year. So instead of every weeknight, I'm going out and shooting a local match. Every weekend, I'm shooting a major match like I used to. I've had to cut way back on that. That being said, I still try to shoot at least one match a month. Like, that's my goal for the year. If I can shoot one match a month, especially if it's a major match, if I can get one major match in a month, that's a good place to be. I think that's a great goal for everyone to be. Even if you have one match every other month, I think that's a good place to be. Now, I think that if you're sitting here saying, and this is not a dig on you, Nick, by any means, but I think if you're sitting here saying, I shot matches, years and years ago, so I'm still, that doesn't matter. I think that you could do more, right?
For sure.
Finding even a local match, like there's so much to learn from just going and shooting a local match. And what I love about local matches is you can test stuff in real time. And so when I have people who are shooting local matches, sometimes I'm like students who are shooting local matches that are consistently students of mine, I'm like, all right, I know you shoot a match a week. Okay. That's awesome. You go shoot the Tuesday night steel match every single week. This week, I want you to focus on balls to the wall, see barely a confirmation of anything, and pull the trigger. See what happens. Next week, I want you to focus on do not have a single makeup shot. Shoot only when you have perfect sight confirmation. Next week, I want you to go try combining the two and run it just at the edge and see what happens. And you can actually experiment with different things here. A great example was a couple of weeks ago, right before Christmas, I shot a local match. And I had a reshoot on a stage. And I love reshoots. I think reshoots are a gift from God because it gives me a chance to either do better or learn something new, right? So I got through the stage. One of the activators didn't activate, so I got the reshoot. So when I go through the stage, there was one point on that stage where I came into a position and I didn't have the gun up. I wasn't fully ready. And like the next time I do this, I'm going to make sure that I have the gun up as I come into position. And watching my footage on the second run versus the first run allowed me to experiment with that and be intentional about that. And it actually played out perfectly because I literally had the gun up. And as soon as I came in that position, my sight, my dot crossed onto the popper. I broke the shot and it was like instant, no waste of time. Like, that right there is a golden nugget of why I need to be doing this technique a little bit better, why I need to work on that in training. So what I look at a match as good for is being a diagnostic tool and telling you what's working well and what's not working in your training and a goal.
So devil's advocate. And again, I'm not defending not shooting matches because I think, like I said, matches are an incredibly important thing that everybody should do. I view it as really important, kind of the first point that you made, Joe, exposure to what is out there, exposure to what other people are doing, exposure to how top level shooters are shooting. I think some of that starts to go out the window when you're just shooting local. If you're going and winning your local match every week. Yep. What I fail to see the benefit there, I don't see why, if you are intentionally practicing at home, you couldn't get a lot of those same tidbits of information in an intentional practice at home. I'll grant you, having a reason to go and do it and having a venue to go and do it and having someone there timing you and keeping you honest and having that pressure of it being a match is it's hard to ignore, right? Like I don't perform at the same level necessarily in my training as I do at a match 100% of the time. So I see the benefits start to degrade. And I think we're saying the same thing. If you're shooting the same match every week,
yep,
especially if it's a local match, I think the benefits start. I don't think just counting your matches gives you credit there. I think matches where you're going and being exposed to people who are shooting at a really high level, maybe higher than you, or you know, even on par with you, but are shooting it differently, I think there's a ton of value there. But I think a lot of just the shooting piece, so measuring your own performance, I struggle with if you what the difference is between a match and just really intentional practice at home.
I agree with you to some degree. I think that having the intentional practice, you can get so much out of it, but I don't see very many people that do it. And the people that are intentional practice, because most of the time people don't know how to practice. People don't know, it's not practice. And that's a word that I try to get away from, because practice is insinuating that you're doing something that you know how to do and you're getting reps on it. Training is doing something that's outside of your comfort zone, and that's where growth happens. So practice is getting reps. Training is expansion. Okay. Most people, and I would say 99% of people, even the Instagram like warriors out there, don't know how to train. They know how to practice. They go out and shoot. They know how to do what they like. Sure. But the level of focus that you needed to especially have a true growth range, that's why people take classes. Because that's where they get exposed to something that's bigger than they are, and they can start getting those light bulbs going off. If you're not seeing light bulbs in your training sessions, which are going to be, you know, especially as you get better as a shooter, they're going to be fewer and farther between, but you're not training hard enough. And that's where I think matches absolutely push you out of your comfort zone. They do put real world pressure on. And at having done both sides of the coin, having worked on the SWAT team, done hundreds of search warrants and live hits and barricaded subjects, and done competition at the highest levels, I can tell you that competition pressure is real.
Yeah.
1,000%. You don't need to have a target shooting back at you to make it real. However, that competition pressure drops significantly even when you're being intentional about it on your own range. It's just the nature of the beast. And for some reason, there are some really weird gremlins that come out in competitions. Okay. I've shot this rifle now for this configuration of this rifle for probably a year and a half at competitions. Okay. Without failure. It's been great. It's been a great rifle. At Florida State, the very first stage of the match, I had a failure to feed where it went home, it locked up, and I had a mortar the rifle. It's never done that before. I went and shot 500 rounds through the 2 days before that. No issues. So why does it happen in the match? I don't know. It's Murphy's Law. And the pressure of you figuring that out on the clock, especially at a major match. And I'm with you on that. If you're just shooting the local match over and over and over again, you're going to get more value cutting half of those matches and putting in some dedicated training time with the lessons that you're learning from the matches.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, hell, half the reason we started this podcast is because I think Nick and I both noticed that people don't know how to train, right? So I'm 100% with you there. 99% of people, myself included, frequently don't know how to train, don't know how to self-assess, don't know how to even set up a training day to create a situation where they can self-assess. And then I also will absolutely grant match pressure is real.
Yep.
Something that is easy to do in training when the beeper goes off at a match and there's 15 people watching behind you. There's no question. I mean, even at a local match, you know, that is real. And that is something that I think has to be pressure tested. So
it's fun. God, it is freaking fun.
I mean, that's why we got into this, right? I mean,
there's such a rush that comes from doing that. And then even if you don't perform well, like I've had stages where I don't perform well, it's still like, if you can get past the frustration side of it, it's still a good time. The people are good. And then if you get to a point where you're like, I've done matches where I've got, you know, 200 people in a grandstand watching a shoot off, like there's some real freaking pressure, bro. Like no shit. Let's perform. And then, you slip and fall on your ass because the grass is wet and you still have to stand.
I didn't see that.
I saw me do it. it's a good time though. It's such a good time.
Yeah. I think there's definitely something to be said for instructor shooting matches. Like you have to, and I like what you said. I like what you said about a lot of that stuff. I think for me, the major matches definitely felt significantly different than any of the local shit that I've shot. So I learned a metric shit ton when I went to nationals. That was just like, it was essentially a weekend of learning. Yep. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was a weekend of winning, but it wasn't. It was a weekend of learning, right? And one of the biggest things I learned with that was I never felt that way in any of the local matches. And I think it's because I had so much time and effort and money and ammo, like training for this thing. And it's like, all right, are you ready? Let's see what, you know, all of that training did. And dude, I can remember, like, we started on stage 20, which was, you know, the one that everyone talks about with the freaking 35 yard partial. There's like 3.5 inch, you know, A zone sticking out. Like it was bananas. And I can remember like running up to, I think it was the second position, and the dot was like moving all over the place. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm like, oh, my hands are shaking. That's cool. That's a really cool trick. So I think the one big thing that I learned from that was learning a strategy to calm that stuff down. So having, you know, a thing in place to, you know, like to deal with that. And, you know, I asked a bunch of dudes on the super squad, like, hey, how do you deal with that? Everyone had a different answer. So I think, you know, one of the biggest learning things for me, you know, at Nationals specifically was like how to deal with those nerves. And I think if you didn't go to that match or, you know, a match that meant a ton to you, then you wouldn't learn that stuff.
Yeah, I think shooting matches that do mean a lot makes a huge difference because it does, for one, it gives you a goal. All right. And I find a lot of my training declines if I don't have a match that I'm working towards.
And by the way, that's why I said that, like, the two pieces of shooting, like being a good competitor, like, yeah, you got to be a good shooter, but you also have to be a good competitor. But like going to matches, you will learn to be a good competitor.
One thing your comment about the shaking hands brought up. I remember the first time I did a search warrant and the pounding in my chest that I felt the first time we could walk up to a door and blow a door and throw a flashbang in, like, and the nerves that you have going to that, very similar to shooting my very first match, very similar feeling, similar adrenaline dump. Okay. And just like doing another 100 search warrants, you learn how to breathe, how to self-regulate to where you can predict, not necessarily predict the outcome, but you can predict your performance. And that works through both matches and in real world situations. It's called stress inoculation, right? When you perform a stressful task enough times, you learn how to control yourself in that situation. So yeah, shooting a match, you know, shooting a lot of big matches, you're going to get better at shooting big matches. You're going to learn how to self, you know, self-regulate your stress and self-regulate your performance to match up, to be able to still do what you need to do to get the hits. Now, am I going to shoot a 1.7 second match when I can do that in my practice? No, not at a national level match where I got a lot of pressure on, but I'm going to get closer to it. Okay. I'm not going to have a 1.7 in practice and then a 3.7 in a match because I got all the stress. I'm going to be at a 1.7 in practice and then maybe a 2.2 in a match. Yep. Right. Does that make sense? So the performance between those two are reducing because we've exposed ourselves to stress over and over again. If you're in that echo chamber of your own practice session, your own practice group, your own team, whatever the case may be, and you're only operating within that echo chamber and you're like, okay, this feels good, this feels good. And then you suddenly get thrown into the big pool of, holy shit, there's all this other things, these other things going on. Suddenly those things that you were doing really well by yourself are put to the test in front of everybody, and your performance gap starts to open up. So when I look at a performance gap, and that's what we see also in practice from like a law enforcement perspective of like executing a standardized test or a qualification to putting effective rounds on the street. There's a huge gap in performance there because they don't train to that level as a majority. I'm not saying all of them Absolutely. Don't because some of them do, right? If you don't train to a high level, if you never trained how to go fast, you're not going to be able to go fast when it comes time to do it. If you never train how to go fast under the pressure of match, real world, et cetera. And I think that there's two different aspects, two different lanes of training for real world pressure. Force on force with simunitions and competition. Those are the two avenues I can see where you get real world pressure without actually having somebody shoot back at you. Okay.
Yep. I would say competition is more effective. I would say competition is more effective.
But right. Both of them are effective. However, competition is quantifiable.
Yes.
And you can quantifiably say this guy performed better than this guy based off of the scores under the pressure with the same target presentation, the same scenario, the same things handed to them without any differentiation. Okay. No scenario change, no stop and redo it. Like same scenario. So it's quantifiable and the pressure is real, mind you. And I think that's why competitions are really good. Force on force is really good for different purposes. You can try tactics, you can try other things. And I think there's really good things there. But that's my view on that. And I really do think that you especially for instructors who are getting into a routine. Okay. You get into a routine, we have the same class, you're the same talking points. You will find new talking points every time you go shoot a match. I promise you that.
Absolutely. I agree with that. No, I like what you said too about, I don't know, maybe one a month, every other month, something like that. I'll be honest, man. There are months where I can't, right? Like I'm at a class that weekend, like every single weekend in that month.
100%, dude.
And two, the other thing is maybe I'm at a class 3 weekends out of that year and I have 1 weekend home. Do you tell your kids like, hey, see you guys later, I'm going to shoot a match? Or do you spend some time with your kids? And I mean, I think it's
100%. I think,
you know, if you're a college student that lives with your cat and your girlfriend, it's really easy to say like, hey, we should go shoot all of these matches, which is great. You should. However, I think it's different for everybody. You know,
no, everyone has definitely, different man. I agree with that 100%. Cause again, like I said, I shot a ton of matches in like from probably 2016 to 2020-ish. And that was even when I was full-time law enforcement, full-time teaching and full-time dad and full-time shooting matches. I don't recommend that because there's a lot of things that you can't do all of them at the peak performance.
Yes.
And
that's exactly what suffer. I was getting at there.
Something will suffer. Okay.
Something will give. Yep.
I went through a divorce and that's not something I would encourage anybody. That's not necessarily because I was shooting matches. I won't say that was not necessarily the foundation of that, but like that's part of my life and it's not a pleasant part of my life. It's part of it. But, at the same time, my law enforcement career, I ended up pushing that away because I was devoted to shooting matches and teaching. Now, that was a great move. Fantastic move at the end of the day, because my goals were different. You know, I had a great time in law enforcement. I'm happy to be out of it. But you have to prioritize the things that are priorities. The thing that I would look at is when you have an opportunity, like plan out a couple during the year and just make them like, hey, I'm not going to teach a class on that weekend because I've got a match to shoot.
Yep. I've got 3 or 4 that are already down on mine. 3 of those are PCSL matches. A couple are, you know,
hell yeah,
USPSA. But would you say that a dude that shoots a ton of matches, despite classification or anything like that, just because he shoots a ton of matches, does that quantify him as a really good instructor?
Absolutely not. So there's 3 things that I look for in an instructor. And this is when I teach instructor development courses, these are the big 3. Now we get a lot more in depth on this, but there are 3 big ones that I want you to look at. Raw skill, your ability to do what you're asking other people to do. I think that's an important aspect. If you can't perform the thing, then absolutely, you shouldn't be teaching the thing. Okay. Yep. Number 2 is your ability to communicate, carry on a conversation, be able to express clearly what you're trying to say.
Oh, that's a massive one.
That's a massive one. Because there's a lot of people, I know great shooters who are awkward as hell socially and can't carry on a conversation. They can't carry on a conversation between 2 people, much less a group of people. Okay. Yep. I've been in those classes before where it's like, okay, this guy is a phenomenal shooter, but he can't even like express his point because he's so introverted or whatever the case may be, right? And the 3rd thing, and it's just as important as the other 2, is your ability to transfer knowledge. And this comes, a big part of this is experience in the instructor world, okay? Knowing how to build a drill to demonstrate a point that person will then be able to take, understand the point that you're trying to make, have stuff that they can work on when they can go home, and yep, quantifiably improve. And so yep, those are, you know, they're 3 very different things, and they're 3 skills. Like, you can have a great communicator who can sit there and talk and talk and talk and shoot drills and have a great time, and you didn't learn jack shit from the class. Okay. And I'm not, Costa, I think, would be a good example of this. And you can come at me if you want to, Chris Costa. Okay, I'm you're light years older than I am, but and you've been in space. But no, and I'm not talking shit, but I've talked to enough people who've been into those classes that they have a great time. It's a good time. You can do some cool things with the gun. But then when I ask them, well, what did you take away? What drills are you going to work on? What did you learn from the class? Like, nothing.
Yeah, no, I can corroborate that for sure. I've been to his class.
Oh, you've been to his class?
Yeah. I took a 3-day class. That was like 12 years ago, probably now.
Okay, so how was it?
Video of me in his class running around. But did I learn anything? Absolutely not. Did I have fun? For sure. At the time, I was like, bro, I am a straight operator after that class. So, you know, I mean, I don't knock people for taking his class. However,
neither do I.
Most certainly not my jam. I kind of, when I take a class, I want to get bullied a little bit. I want to freaking have a bunch of things pointed out to me in my shooting, whether it's, you know, the behaviors that I'm doing. And then I want to know ways that I can work on that stuff when I leave. And I say bullying just because, I don't know, like, I kind of, like, that time you and I hung out, we talked about movement. And, like, you felt strongly about it. I felt strongly about it. And I think it worked for both of us because, like, you went home and tested it out.
Yeah.
What I was saying, and then I went home and I was like, let's see if this bastard is right. And, like, I'm going to feel salty about it, but I'm going to go do it. And, like, that's the stuff that I'm really, really interested in. And that's why I like hanging out with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way. Like, and at the end of the day, you know, even though I feel strongly about it, I'm willing to put that aside if your technique is better, because I want to get better. Right.
Absolutely.
And that's where egos will get into the mix, and people won't improve because they don't want to take instruction from someone they don't like. And even if you like it, it may go contrary to what your original thought process was. and that's okay. But you should be looking, again, when we look at a technique, ask yourself, is it faster or slower? Is it more or less accurate? Is it consistent? If it is those three things, then whatever you were doing before, you need to throw in the trash can.
Mm-hmm. I think what all of us are saying is like instructors should compete. I think we're all in agreement there. But if you looked online, you would think that there's some weird divide, which I think is really crazy because I don't know anyone who has said instructors should not compete.
No, that's not,
but, not on this side of the world. There's definitely some tactical instructors out there that would say otherwise, but
yeah, no one that I hang out with for sure.
Yeah.
I made the analogy that it strikes me as the performance shooting world's version of you shouldn't take a shooting class from somebody who's never been in a gunfight.
Yep.
It is.
That may be oversimplifying it, but I feel like that's what we're getting into here. Obviously it's important. Obviously everybody should do it. I mean, everybody here and everybody that I shoot with values competition, comes from a competition shooting world, or at least is involved in competition shooting. So we all recognize the importance of it. It's just whether, is that really the barrier to entry for an instructor? And I don't think it is.
So I don't think it's the barrier to entry, but I do think that it's a very good, it's a very good way to see if that instructor is continuing their road to improvement.
Yep.
Because I think, and willing to put their shit out there. I've had a lot of people ask me like, what do you think about getting a bunch of IG instructors to come shoot a match together? I'm like, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
Okay. You might get 5 or 10 guys that are willing to do that. But the problem is it's an ego hit regardless, unless you're the winner, which there's only one. Okay. It's really easy. And as an instructor, this goes across the board. Now, I'm not afraid to talk about it. As an instructor, it feels really good to stand up in front of a class and be better than everyone there. Sure. Very rarely do I have a class where I have somebody who can be competitive with me and push me at all.
Sure.
In a class, right? And that feels good. That's an ego boost. Okay. When you put yourself in a position to have that ego boost injured, it's uncomfortable.
100%.
And that's why people don't like to shoot competitions. People in law enforcement, military are notorious for this. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the Instagram instructor world, it kind of hits another nerve there. And it's because they can feel on a human nature level, it feels good to be at the top. And then if you put yourself into a position where you're no longer at the top, it doesn't feel good. So we are naturally going to avoid that situation that doesn't feel good. Unless you're a masochist and you like to push yourself, which I guess I am. I like to push myself. I don't like that feeling of losing, so I'm going to work my ass off until I don't lose.
Dude, I'm the same way. But at the same
time, if I put out an invite to the top 50 instructors on Instagram, I would be willing to bet that only 5 of them would actually be able to make it.
That's.
I agree. Let me know when that is.
Find an excuse not to be there, or they'll just flat out say no. Because, and this would be like, even with a open schedule, like you pick the day you want to do it, we're all going to come together, and because all of our schedules are going to match perfectly, and we're going to do this thing. We'll plan it out 3 years in advance. Okay. You'll see a handful of people show up because it's way more comfortable to stand in front of a class and be the expert and have everyone looking up to you and worshiping everything that comes out of your mouth than it does to have to go out there and prove it.
It's going to be a test no matter what, right? I mean, it's always going to be a test, and people don't like to be tested.
Yep.
Yes. And that's like, there's pressure, right? Like when I went to nationals, I'm like, all right, I got judgy ass eyes behind me. You know, I know they're judging me. I know that, you know, after this weekend, people are going to look it up on practice score. That's freaking, you know, that's pressure. It's like, but no, I'm going to go do it anyway. Like I legit don't care what other people think. I'm doing this for my own growth. And I think it would be really, really good for me to go do this. I'm like, well, that's why.
Here's another question for you. Would you have gotten more business if you'd won nationals?
For me, probably not. I don't get dudes that like want to do a bunch of like USPS.
That's all I need, right?
Yep.
Would you have gotten less business if you'd finished lower?
No.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Maybe. I don't know.
No.
Probably not.
No. Did your placement at Nationals affect your business at all?
No, because I mean the people that I teach are not looking to get better at matches.
Okay, and even, not even that necessarily, but because I guarantee you got some people who are trying to get better at matches that are taking your classes.
For sure, some of them.
So here's the thing though, and this is something that I thought, you know, back in the day that I've had my mental aspect shift on this, because I thought like, hey, I need a win to you know, like stay relevant in my business. That's not necessarily the case. Okay. And I can tell you this, like I used to think like, oh man, if I go win Nationals, then I'll get all these sponsorship opportunities. Okay. Well, I was a silver medalist at the Rifle World Shoot in 2019, and a gold medalist this year. Guess how many opportunities came from that?
Many. Zero.
Zero. No, nothing new. Like, yeah. Is it a nice little thing to put on my resume? Is it nice to have the plaque on the wall? Sure. But does it make jack shit of a difference when it comes to actually securing business for the training aspect? Not really. Now, no. If you can say, hey, I'm a 12-time national champion, I've won this many world shoots. Yeah, there's some resume padding that's going to help you out there in the long run. But to say, I came in fifth at national, so that's really going to hurt my business. No, it's not.
Yep.
I came in 25th in nationals, so that's really going to hurt my business. No, it's not. It's not going to hurt you to go do it. I guarantee if you lose somebody who was going to sign up for a match because you finished poorly at nationals, you didn't want that person to be in your class anyway.
No, for sure.
So that's sure. That's what I go back to when people are like, well, because I've had that conversation. I don't want to like go shoot a match because then I'm not going to do well. And then I don't want to like have that out there for bullshit. Nobody freaking cares. Nobody cares. That's at the end of the day, that's what it really comes down to. Nobody cares how you finish. Now, is somebody going to talk shit to you? Probably. You go suck at a match. Guess what? I will talk shit to you just because, but it's not going to lower my expectation or my opinion of you.
Now, shit talking is a normal thing. That should happen all the time.
Yes.
Like, correct. Come to 100%. a range day. There's going to be some shit talking.
100%.
If there isn't, you're shooting at the wrong people.
No doubt.
Well, dude, this was good. I think people will like this. Maybe some questions answered for people on competition and all of that jazz. Joe, I appreciate you coming on. If people want to find you for classes, how do they find you?
The best way to hit me up for classes is my email, joe@farewellfirearms.com. Instagram, you can hit me up on there, or I have online classes, and like a subscription model, kind of like Patreon type deal, but it's my own thing, dryfiremastery.com. That's where I post all my carbine courses, my 3-gun course, my, you know, competition stuff. So that's where you can get me. YouTube's, all those places, I'm there.
I heard there was a really cool video on the dry fire mastery thing.
Oh yeah. Nick has been on there a couple times.
Oh.
So it was funny because Nick was like, I'm going to do a drill. I asked him, I said, will you do a drill for the carbine course? He's like, yeah, absolutely. It's like, I'm going to do a build drill and a Blake drill combined. Like, that's actually already in the course, but do it anyway. So it's actually cool because you get my version of it and you get Nick's version. Mine's much better. Mind you. No, it's really interesting because Nick's a lot longer version. And he talks about some other things that I didn't cover in mine. So that's why I love bringing on other SMEs to those courses for bonus content. So I did that in the competition handgun course. I think I have like 10 or 15 different instructors that sent in videos. And it's cool because I get to learn something from them. And it's extra value to the student.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Well, dude, thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me, Nick. Enjoyed it. Good conversations.
All right.